a pre-recorded version of the MGO Blog Roundtable on WTKA 1050, 9 o'clock Thursdays. I did say pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, somebody is going to be very confused.
Welcome back inside the MDN Studios, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. Brian Cook is here. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
Ed is not here. Ed is the empty seat. He has an ill child, so Ed is not here. Craig Ross is here. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing really well. Great to see you guys here for the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider. Sam is down in Orlando. He is at the Under Armour All-America. Under Armour, Army start to slur together.
It's not the Army anymore.
I think this is the last year that their name is on it.
Is it?
I think it might be. This is the last year that their name is on it.
Worst marketing decision in history.
To take your name off of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I mean.
We call it. I mean, it's like unlike say like the Cheez-It Bowl last night, people don't, it's like the Copper or whatever it used to be, right. or the Cactus. I don't even know, but it's, no one calls it. They get a bowl of Cheez-Its. But the Army game, people will always call it. They could have some other name on it. It could be the Craig Ross All-Star game, but people will call it the Army All-American game. They'll have it forever. So maybe it's actually smart to pull the money off of it because they're going to call it that anyway.
Nah.
But that's where Sam is. He'll have full reports from those trips next week and beyond. He'll be back in the air chair officially coming up on Monday, the 7th of January.
I have a brief shout out to one of our listeners, Patty Jackson in West Allis, Wisconsin, which I think is near Milwaukee, sent me a note saying she listens to our show every week, really likes Ed and Brian, but doesn't like me so much.
But told me,
really? And I thought, well, why don't you send Brian a note then, as opposed to me, who you don't like. But anyway, Patty, thanks. I appreciate anyone who's
We appreciate you listening, show. And yeah. We do appreciate that from the land of the cheese, but yeah. We appreciate all of your contributions here on the roundtable.
He got you and Ed mixed up.
No, I don't think
you
so.
You don't think so?
No, I'm pretty sure not.
I don't know. I think y'all bring your own pieces to the table here.
Yeah.
And we need old guy radio. Perspective is always needed.
Old guy is what I am.
Got any Trotsky for us?
No Trotsky today.
No Trotsky. You don't have any more other obscure references.
Nothing this morning. You're
ready to go. He's got his pad ready to go to talk basketball.
I'm ready to talk basketball and football, whatever you guys want.
All right, we'll start
and
with
hockey.
We'll start with football. The bowl game's coming up. As I was talking about with EA, you have depending on who you're asking from both fan bases, you're either pessimistic or apathetic. There's very little anything else amongst the fan bases. I was kind of that way. I was a little apathetic about the game. I think that part of that is just, you know, the way the season ends and you have the gap before the game. But now we're 2 days away from the game. I'm excited for the game because how many chances do you get to see your football team play? I mean, for me, it's a chance to see Christian Turner. It's a chance to see some of the other guys like Josh Ross that didn't get that played at the Will last year, but last season, but he's going to play at the Mike. And it's an opportunity for those guys. I know it's not what bowl games used to be, but that's what bowl games are now.
Yeah, so that's... I mean, that's kind of a Craig Ross sell job, right? Like,
I mean, you get a chance. This year it's 13. Hopefully in the future it's 14 or 15 chances to see your team play a football game. And every time they play, I look forward to it. I just needed to get closer to the game.
No.
So you're still in the apathetic category.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a game where four guys aren't playing for Michigan for various reasons. And it's against Florida again. And it's, like, just kind of the appetizer to the playoff. And it's really... Yeah, it's a New Year's Six Bowl, right? But 2 years ago, when Michigan was in a New Year's Six Bowl, like, Peppers didn't play because he was hurt. And people were concocting these wild stories about how he skipped the bowl game and he faked his injury. And this year, it's like, whatever, get out of here, you crazy guys. And I'm kind of like, I mean, that's not the wrong decision, but it also is like, I'm just not really into this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Ira. I mean, it's a chance to see Michigan play. I'm always excited about that. It's against a team that's at least a good team. They're not, obviously, they're not a great, Florida's not a great team. I mean, and fans will be very depressed, I think, if we lose this game. I mean, in that context, it's an important game.
I don't
I'm
know
not
if that's
sure.
going to change. I don't know winning the game is going to change the mentality of the fan base.
I don't think winning the game is going to make the fans feel happy all of a sudden. But I think losing the game will be like an additional sort of weight on the
kick in the nether region,
right? After the Ohio State game, and it's I heard Eric on earlier, Eric Adelson, and he's picking Florida, and I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I mean, Florida lost; they got killed by Missouri. I don't think Missouri's a great team, but they got killed by Missouri at home. They lost, or they won the next week. They were down 31-17 to Carolina at home and came back in the fourth quarter to barely scrape out a win against South Carolina, who's not also a great team. So Florida isn't, they got killed by Georgia, and they lost at Kentucky. So this isn't a great team, but they're, you know, what I look, when I saw them this year, I thought, okay, they're an all right team, they're a decent team. Is Michigan going to be able to do anything on defense without Gary and Bush? And the answer is, I don't know. Higdon is a loss, too.
They play a third of the year without Rashawn, so I think that part they're used to. They're used to that.
But, you know, how much the loss of Devin Bush is going to mean, you know, I'm not quite sure. No one really is. But in any event, so I don't know. To me, the game is a coin flip game, and I don't know who's going to win. But I think once the game starts, Michigan fans will really say, "Hey, we really want to win this game." And I'm not saying it'll turn around the sting of the season, but I think going the other way will be, will be depressing, to say the least, for Michigan fans.
And Brian is very apathetic about the.
He's like, experience. I don't know, and I don't care. Right?
I mean, like, you know, it's. People are watching these games for the interceptions.
Well, they were last night. They were last night where there were 9 of them. Gee whiz.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. It's like, it's just like, can this be an absurd college football game? And I don't know.
Hey, Ira, I think we just missed 5 more interceptions.
Yeah, the cheese Int Bowl. Yeah, they might have thrown 5 more. Anthony Stateman watched that game last night. Missed kicks and changing kickers and 9 interceptions later, and he's here to tell the tale.
I mean, I tell you, if there's 9 interceptions in the Peach Bowl, I will be entertained. That will be entertaining.
Well, hopefully they're all thrown by guys in orange and blue, but royal blue.
If there's 9 interceptions, probably Michigan's chipping in.
Probably. One of the things that I'm looking to see in the game, because I'm expecting, knowing where Dan Mullen came from, is they're going to try to emulate what Ohio State did, you know, at the end of November. They're not Ohio State. They don't have the same weapons. They don't have the same quarterback. They're not as talented. They don't have the same play caller. But they do have they try to do a lot of similar things. So what did Michigan learn? Now, I know Don Brown in the media avail this morning said a lot of the things that they made mistakes in that game. He said the buck stops with him. He's, you know, starting there. But he said there were a lot of day one type mistakes that they shouldn't have been making. So how much can they correct, and how much different will it look against a similar style offense? Again, they're not Ohio State. They're not even Ohio State light. They're a few steps below that. But the style is still the same.
I mean, it's similar. I mean, they're kind of like a JT Barrett Ohio State team. That's what they wanted.
Right. So they're going to watch. You don't think they're going to watch the film of the Ohio State game and try to figure out how they can do a few more things?
They're going to go right at Brandon Watson. That's what Ohio State did, and that's what seems to make sense. And we'll see if Michigan has a response to that. They didn't really in the Ohio State game. We might see some Avery Thomas. I mean, that's another thing where it's like, okay, that's a preview of next year. And I mean, they've had a month to kind of think about it, and we'll see if they adapt.
Well, and that's something you just said, I think, is interesting. We are going to see a preview for next year. We're going to see Ross at the mic position and see how that works out. We're going to see, some things we already saw, but we're going to see how they respond to losing Rashawn Gary. And probably Winovich will be out part of the game, so we're going to see Michigan with defensive ends that aren't Winovich or Gary a part of the time. So we are going to catch some of the Michigan defense, you know, next year, and that will be interesting at the very least. Hopefully it'll be positive.
And then when the game is over, there are a few decisions that are going to be made. So sounds like there's probably a couple that we haven't really even discussed, but I know Josh Metellus put his name in just to see where, you know, what the status was, but it sounds like he'll come back. Sounds the same thing with like a guy like Khalik Hudson, but David Long said he's going to make a decision after the game. Levert Hill's going to make a decision after the game. And then speaking with the media this morning, Zach Gentry said he put in for the draft grades. He got a grade that did not disappoint him, and he's going to make a decision after the game as well. Would it surprise you if out of the Hill, Long, Gentry trio that maybe even two or all three of them were gone?
Well, you know, Sam said on his site a couple of days ago that he was hearing some good things about Hill returning. Long, you know, could go. I mean, the problem for Michigan's cornerbacks is they don't really have a lot of film of them being targeted. They just, like, opposing defenses didn't even bother. And so, like, yeah, they're probably going to be draftable, but have they really put themselves in the best position possible? You could argue maybe not. Gentry, he's very much an NFL tight end. Like, they don't really care about your blocking as long as you're 6'8" and can pluck balls out of the air. And so he's got a future career there. It's just about how he feels about when he wants to go.
Yeah, I mean, these are sort of borderline cases because none of them is going in the first 2-3 rounds, probably.
I think the corners
might go around three.
They have a shot to be in the first three rounds.
If Gentry tests well, he would
you think?
Be,
okay. Yeah.
I mean, because so, the athleticism and the size, you can't coach 6'9". Can't coach 6'8", 262, and athletic.
Well, I mean, my guess is if they're graded out in the first three rounds, there's a good chance all of them will be gone.
Sam was hearing. I have a feeling that, and I'm guessing on Gentry, but I'm guessing that Gentry might go. Long, I would lean, just again, based on what I'm hearing and guessing, I would guess that he would be leaning towards leaving. And Levert, I would guess that he's leaning towards coming back. And as far as what that means for next year, I think that having at least one of those corners come back is a major
big deal.
A major deal for this defense, right? Because it's Ambry and who? And you'd rather be Ambry and Levert Hill than Ambry and Vincent Gray. Right. And I'm not to knock those guys, but none of them have reps at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, absolutely true. I mean, so that's a big deal. Maybe a lot of those decisions will come out of how they fare in this game, too.
It's possible. What about the redshirt rule? You think we'll see any of those guys? Because except for maybe Van Sumeren, I think, who's played the four, he'd be the only guy that if he played in the bowl game would change his status with his redshirt. Everyone else either played way more than four or they played three or fewer games, so they... Cam McGrone or Joe Milton and Christian Turner, those guys can play without burning a red shirt. You think we'll see any kind of an impact from
Turner? Yeah. I mean, he had a couple of carries, I think. I forget what game it was, but he looked still pretty good. A guy who's going to be a contributor here, and they've been talking him up. I don't really see anyone else kind of pushing through as a guy who's going to see a lot of reps, just because Michigan has all their corners. And they're going to probably mix Ambry in, and then do you really need a fifth corner? Probably not. We'll see if Dax Hill gets eligible, though.
He's not here yet.
I don't think Van Sumeren will play.
And I assume he's a kid that wouldn't play. One guy that I would like to see play just, I'm not saying extended reps, but just an opportunity to get out there and get his feet wet a little bit would be Cam McGrone. Because he's a guy that next year, with Devin Bush obviously going off to the pros, he's a guy to play next to Josh Ross to give... And there are going to be other options, but we also saw that Devin Gill can be beaten in space, and so they need other guys that maybe can play better in space at the linebacker position.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be an interesting battle because Gill has a ton of reps, and he's a low-rated three-star, kind of looks like it on the field, and McGrone is like basically Devin Bush except a little taller per the recruiting sites. So like that's like in terms of what Brown wants on his defense, I think it's going to be McGrone. But, like, how quickly can he get up on all the things he needs to know?
You know, I would be very surprised if McGrone doesn't play. You're not burning anything there.
Right.
I mean, he's going to play, I assume. If he doesn't play, I would question what's going on. Either he's not able to play or
Gill out there. Like, it didn't really make a whole lot of sense to give him reps that could have gone to Ross for much of the year, but they still did it, so...
I'm curious to see what their linebacker rotation looks like on Saturday, and I do think McGrone playing will be a really good sign for, if he plays well anyway, it'll be a good sign for next year. Get him some reps. Get him some more game reps against a good competition. Jordan Anthony is another guy. Just, I'm not saying to give a guy reps for the sake of reps, but if the circumstance presents itself, which at the linebacker positions it probably will, there are some guys out there that would be fun to watch. That's what the bowl games have turned into. If you're not in the playoff, you're we've always known they're exhibition games, but they're even more to that level of exhibition games now. So I was having this conversation, you know, with the family over the holidays. All right, since, you know, Karan's not there, we know what Karan was like. Well, I want to see what Christian Turner's like. Let me see what the future looks like a little bit. And for Christian Turner, how cool would it be if he could have a like one of those games that puts him out there on the spotlight a little bit in front of his home fans? He's from the Atlanta area. He went to Buford High School. So he'd be a hometown kid, a chance to go back home to play in the Peach Bowl. It would be a pretty cool experience for him to get ready for next year, because he, along with obviously Evans, True Wilson, and Zach Charbonnet, who's an early enrollee at running back, are going to probably be the running backs next year. I'm assuming that's going to be the case. They are trying to Haskins back there again, but he may play defense. So they're still trying to figure out where they want to put him.
Yeah. He's going to get he'll get reps. He'll get reps in this game. I don't have any question.
Any other comments on football?
No.
Mr. Apathy?
What do you mean?
You're a very, I think that's a good word for it. You're not like, you know, saying that you don't care at all. And you're not saying that you super care. So you're apathetic. You're
apathetic kind of is don't care at all.
No, apathetic is, well, a lack of care. Not saying that you're like disappointed. Like that's a caring in the opposite. So that's what I'm at. My point is you're not, you don't care to the negative. You don't care to the positive. You're just, you're apathetic.
I'm excited.
You're not.
I'm excited. Yes, I am.
You're not.
I'm excited about the game. It's a Michigan football game against a historically good program.
Nobody's excited.
We're coming
about this
game. Coming off a terrible loss. I'm excited for Michigan to come out and play well.
Thank you, Craig Ross. Thank you, Craig Ross.
He's lying.
I didn't feel that way maybe a week ago, but I definitely feel that way now. I'm excited about the game.
You're lying.
I'm definitely not lying.
Nobody's excited about this game.
I am.
Thank you, Craig. Craig tried to watch the First Responders game yesterday, but they only got about a quarter, not even a quarter in before they had to cancel it.
Oh, that's right.
Loeffler was coaching in that game.
He was?
Yeah, he was still the OC for Boston College. They won last game.
Oh, I didn't realize.
With A.J. Dillon, and they got him a half of the quarter, so like an eighth of the game, then lightning delay. And then they said, heck with it. And I thought, I'll give Boston College's AD credit, because they were saying no refunds on the game. Uh-huh. And so you paid money to go to the game, and there were, there's 5,000 people? I don't even know. Down in the Cotton Bowl.
So is BC going to refund them?
So BC said they will refund the cost to all their fans.
Yeah, good for them.
I assume Boise will step in and do the same thing for theirs, because the bowl people are like, you bought your tickets, you suckers. We're not giving you your money back. Go enjoy Dallas in a lightning storm. I think it's pretty much what they said to do. I thought of you, though, because Loeffler was code. They kept mentioning Loeffler's name as they were.
I actually didn't realize it. I assumed that he was not.
They're already down at Bowling Green.
Yeah.
So. Brian, Craig Ross, the newest season ticket holder for Bowling Green
football. I will go to Bowling Green games next year.
I bet you will. Especially late in the year. They'll play Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. You can get down there for any of those games.
Yeah, that's my plan. My brother lives in Toledo. We'll go down.
There you go. Piece of cake. Pick him up on the way. Go down to the games. Yeah. I might even hitch a ride and go down to one of those games.
You'll be welcome.
We'll go support Jack Harbaugh's alma mater, Bowling Green State University. But we're here to talk Michigan basketball now, because this, and it has been for 5 years, this is a basketball school. And you know how I know we're a basketball school? The Penn State game is sold out. The Air Force game sold out.
Air Force.
The Western Michigan game sold out. And the games during the break are selling out, meaning you have to sell the student tickets up top and the maze raid seats that they don't fill. It's a basketball school now with a team that's undefeated heading into their last non-conference game on Sunday.
You know, for someone, I mean, I've had season tickets forever. I've been going to Michigan basketball since the end of the Kazi era, and I've never seen the place fill up against meatball teams. And
never has.
I mean,
except for the Fab Five era, I think.
No.
Not even the meatball games in the sophomore year? I know the freshman year now, but the sophomore year they didn't?
No. There were empty seats always. And so this is a whole new deal. And I'm not sure how far this team, I'm not sure it's warranted yet. I mean, it's warranted because it's Michigan basketball. It's a great game. They're great kids, well coached. It's always warranted. But, in terms of fan expectation, I think it might be slightly inflated.
It's been a great start to the year. Now he's the pessimistic one.
What is going on with Craig Ross? He's talking all kinds of junk about our basketball.
This is his favorite Michigan basketball team. They play like 5.5 guys.
Short bench.
Like your favorite scenario.
I love
8 guys, but still.
I love short benches. I love what Michigan's doing with their team. I love how it's happening with guys who aren't 5-star guys or even to a large extent, four-star guys.
They're all four-star guys at this point.
At this point, yeah.
No, but they were all recruited, and they're basically all four-star guys.
Is that right?
Most of them.
I guess they were four stars around the number.
And Charles was a five-star, so Charles was a five-star.
Xavier was like 60th, and Teske was like 100th, and Iggy was a five-star.
In my mind, on this show he was. If you recall, when someone called in and asked me where I would put him, I said, I'd put him around number 30 in the class, and the guy started laughing.
Well, that was where the composite ended up.
Is it really?
Because he had kind of a weird situation because Rivals made him a five-star, but didn't rank him because he's Canadian.
Okay. Right. So, for some reason, they don't seem to put Canadians in the mix, which is crazy.
Like, they have a different number of fingers, so it's not fair.
So they can't be... They can't get a grade because they're north of the border, basically?
It's really strange, especially because his school played a bunch of U.S. schools, so it's like you have enough data.
Yeah, and he played AAU ball. It wasn't it wasn't like they couldn't see him.
But so his composite was like 60th because of that, because he was not rated by Rivals. And then someone at 24/7 was like, wait a minute. If he's a five-star, at worst, he's like the 35th best player in the country. So that's what they did, and he bounced up to it. He's a legit five-star. Like, the idea that Michigan... is still like kind of scraping by. I don't think it's really.
Well, they got
accurate.
A couple, Mr. Basketball kind of guys in Michigan that were 4-star players. Yeah. That whether they were winning it or final, in the final, they're pretty much all 4 or 5 stars.
I'll bet if you look around, there's a lot of teams.
Was Eli a 3 or 4?
He was a 3-star. He wasn't even in the top 300. And Livers is around 150, 145.
But he's a 4-star.
I know. I mean, that's kind of borderline right there. I remember him being a little bit higher, but
145. Check it out.
But the point that Brian's making is this is not Zach Novak, Stu Douglas.
No, it's not Zach Novak, Stu Douglas. But it's also a team that, if you looked at recruiting evaluations, isn't going to look a whole lot different than a lot of teams in the Big Ten. And in fact, it may even look worse on paper than, say, Maryland or some other teams.
Yeah, but then they get coached.
Well, and that's part of the point. I mean, part of the point is that I think recruiting evaluations, A, don't always look at the right things. They don't look at the things I would be looking at. And B, they don't look at defense at all. They just assume everyone can play defense. And so I'm not a huge fan, but I know I'm in a minority on this in recruiting evaluations.
But they're fun.
They're fun. They're I agree. They're fun.
But they're
I love
fun.
Them.
They're winning, and they will be undefeated heading into 2019 because they're going to play Binghamton on Sunday, and that's the game to get the little bit of rust off from the month of December or whatever to get you ready for Big Ten play.
Yeah, I don't care about the recruiting evaluations in this context. Iggy was not the number 60 or 30 guy. He's probably a top 5 or 10 guy in the class.
Well, I mean, if you look at pro potential, which is a lot of what they grade on, then maybe he's not. But like, would you rather have him or Nasir White from UNC? There's no question.
And it's and Livers is not the one number 145 guy. I mean, he's a much better basketball player than that. And so it doesn't matter, how they were rated. It matters how they're playing now, and that this is very much a cohesive team. But I mean, one of the things I've got questions for you guys is, do you see a few sort of cracks as they've played weaker competition here over the last 3 or 4 games? The first 8 games, you would say, you couldn't play better than what Michigan played in those first 8 games. I mean, truly, to beat Villanova.
Well, like through the Purdue game, basically.
Yeah, through the Purdue game. I mean, you couldn't play better than what they played, really, against Purdue, which is a good team who's losing a lot of close games to good teams, but they're a very good team. I think they're still on number 15 or 16.
Right, the way they played Carolina, they played at Villanova.
I mean, Carolina just got killed here. And
they also beat Gonzaga.
Yeah. And Carolina's a good team. And to beat Villanova by 27 or whatever it is, 37 on their floor, that, you can't play better than what Michigan was playing. And now you're seeing Michigan, I don't know if they're playing down to competition or what's going on exactly. I mean, I have my own ideas about each of these individual games.
I'm not overly concerned. I would look at it in a couple of ways. First of all, December things happen, right? You go through a tough stretch of games, and you're in basketball. It is hard to maintain that level of motivation and that level of intensity every single game. They also played the two of those games in that stretch, the Western game and the Air Force game, that fit into these categories. The Western game, where you've got like the kid Flowers, who's from Southfield, who goes off. He wants to play his best game against the in-state schools. Those are tough games in December to play in-state teams. And the other one, the Air Force game, they actually played pretty well, especially in the second half. But I've talked to John Beilein about this in the past and other coaches. The suitcase game is a really hard game to play.
The suitcase game?
When you have your suitcase at the gym because you're going home for 3 days afterwards, and all you can think about is mom's cooking and seeing your friends, and think, because you get 3 days away. It's a very hard game to keep that focus for the entire game. But they actually played pretty well, especially in the second half of the Air Force game. So they got past those, and now they're going to lose games at some point. They're going to lose, right?
They're not going to win all their games.
Right, they lose games. So I'm not overly concerned. Yeah.
So, I mean, the Air Force game doesn't really bother me. It was like a 24-point game versus on Ken Pom, and they won by 21. And, you know, the reason that it was kind of a struggle early is that Air Force was throwing the zone at Michigan. Michigan was getting open looks for three and just clanking all of them.
Yeah, so they were 1-9 on their first threes, and they were all wide open.
And so then you're able to, like, recover from that, and you hit a bunch in the second half. And it's really just about, like, the order in which that happens that makes people upset. Like, if Michigan comes out and they're 7-13 or something, which they were after their 1-9 start, and then they go 1-9, people are like, whatever. Yeah. But because, you know, it has another one of those ugly first halves, it's not really a huge concern. Now, the Western game, I think, was more of a concern just because their offense was often kind of just a slog. But also, like, they're not as locked in as they were early in the year. And it's, you know, if you're going to have a lull, December, when you have one game a week against kind of a tomato can, is the time to have it. So it doesn't really...
That's the other part, too. There is a... Craig, I mean, you've watched a lot of basketball, and to call them old, right? There is a rhythm to basketball where you play... Certain times of year, you play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then you play Saturday, Sunday, right? So you get your two games in, and then you maintain that almost all season until you get to the end where you're playing every day.
That's a great point. I really do like two games a week in terms of team sort of rhythm. There's no doubt about that.
It's easy. You can lose your rhythm, and I think that to come back against in the game against Binghamton, to just kind of get your feet wet, to get the rhythm back a little bit. I like having Penn State as the first Big Ten game because you're not opening up with Indiana or somebody else. Indiana's the next one, brings an interesting test coming here because they've got a couple of really good players. The freshman and the sophomore both are studs.
Phenomenal.
They've got great players. So they've got a very talented team coming in. Do I have concerns about the team? Sure. They're going to have games where they don't shoot the ball well. They're going to have games where they make, where their defensive rotations are not quite as crisp as they have been in some of the games. But I'm not going to sit here on December 27th and list off a whole bunch of concerns because of a couple games in December against the tomato cans.
I hear you. And I went back and watched the Western game in slow motion. And one is what you guys are saying is accurate. The kid
Flowers. I mean, he was terrific.
I mean, a lot of those shots were bad shots, and yet they still went in. He's not going to make those shots. He was checked. They were bad shots. They went in. Fine. And the thing on that game was Michigan, this is amazing, was 10 of 30 at the rim. We had 30 shots at the rim. We made 10 of them. And so that's just not something that's going to really happen very often to any team, let alone this particular team. It was astounding. And so maybe some of the suitcase impact really was there in the Western game. I agree with Brian about Air Force. The only thing on that game that was a little, and we played really good defense for most of the game against Air Force, actually. And the one thing that was disconcerting was the turnovers in the first half. Way, you know, a lot of sloppy ball handling and play in the first half that was sort of pointless.
Yeah,
we missed open threes, but then in the second half it did stabilize. Michigan played a pretty good half. In fact, they played pretty well after midway through the first half.
Yeah, like 10-15 minutes in. Yeah, they started playing better. Yeah. So then you move forward and you get ready for. I mean, not that anyone cares about Binghamton, although I'm guessing it should be a good crowd. They said there's not pretty much for the rest of the year, there's not a ticket left.
Yeah. Binghamton is really terrible.
I only know one thing about Binghamton. That's where Tony Kornheiser went to college.
I know.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's all I know about Binghamton.
And they're pretty terrible. There's one sort of curiosity with them, though. They're one of the best shot-blocking teams in the country. They're terrible on almost every single metric. I mean, off the charts terrible, but I think they're like fourth or fifth in the country in shot blocks, which is really bizarre since
They're Binghamton,
and, you'd and they're small,
that, right? And you'd expect they that to be a one, team with like right. length everywhere to be blocking
right.
shots.
Right? No, they're a bunch of six. I think they start four guys, 6'4" or shorter, and a 6'9" guy, and he is blocking a lot. But the 6'4" guy, their power forward, who's 6'4", is blocking a lot.
I think so Craig needs to dig deeper on these. Maybe they're getting all their blocks against certain teams and not against others.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't look that carefully, but I just when I was, you know, you go into KenPom and you look and you see red everywhere, which is bad on every metric, and then there's this bright green, and I said, what's that? Shot blocks.
Very random is really what it sounds like.
But beyond that, no, they're not a good team. You know, in basketball, and I've said this before, you play against yourself as much as you play against the team you're playing against. And so when I watch a Western game or an Air Force game, I'm still looking at, you know, how are we playing within the context of our own abilities, in the context of what you're trying to do as a basketball team, and not just are we beating this team badly. To some extent, the Western game in particular was a little disappointing. I think the most disappointing of these last four games has been South Carolina, because that's a team where the big guy, the Silva really took it to us inside, and I felt we did not do a good job. Even though we shot great, we shot well enough to win the game quite easily. But the defense in that game was a little disappointing. So
there's a guy on Twitter, Eric Spanspur. I don't remember his name, but I've been retweeting him fairly consistently. He did a breakdown of the South Carolina game, and it was like sloppy. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, they don't come in with a healthy level of respect for the opponent because they have a terrible offense, and they let Silva drive right, which is on the scouting report.
Right, exactly.
So, like, you can't let that happen. I feel like Michigan will have to clean up some stuff there, but, you know, the capabilities that they've shown are going to be, going forward, a very good defense consistently. So, like, they're not going to be the number one two-point defense in the country. They don't have enough length and shot blocking for that. But, you know, they're second in the country at forcing other twos. So that's shots that aren't at the rim and shots that aren't threes. Yeah. And
which you want to do.
Right.
It's ideal.
That's the whole game world. Is to force people to put up two-point jumpers. Michigan does that better than anyone except Richmond or something. And that is something that we saw last year. Well, we saw a little bit in the Donlin year, but that's like the basis of Michigan's defense. And I think that's something that is going to continue. Now, they're going to get better at the rim opponents, and because, you know, the Michigan's at the rim defense early in the year was simply unsustainable. Like Eric Pascal going 3-13 from two. I mean, that's not something that Michigan forced. That's just Pascal missing some shots. But I feel like it's gone the other way in the last few games, where it's like, you know, Flowers is going off
to the extreme one way, to the extreme the other.
Right.
Find where's the happy medium in the middle.
Like Mate Kotsar is like throwing up line drive.
Oh yeah, the bank off the
bank
hook
off
shots.
Like hook shots, and I'm
from
just like,
straight away, not even from angle, where you'd say, okay, maybe he's like 13 feet away, and he throws those things up. You know, I used to play against a guy in pickup ball like that, and everyone said the best rebound position was mid court because those things went up so hard they just go bang, and that's what those suckers are like. And, but they went in,
and like you know, Derek Pardon's banking in the three, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they were fortunate early in the year, and they still should have won that Villanova game by like 17 points. They still should have beat North Carolina by 17 points, but they blew those teams out because they were getting a little bit lucky with opponent shots. And in these most recent games, I feel it's gone the other way.
Should be a fun January, February into March. They're going to be one of the top, if not the top team in the Big Ten. It's them. It's Michigan State, I guess. They're a top 10 team. Yeah. Indiana's got some talent. It hasn't all come together yet. They have a couple of talented players.
See, I think Michigan State is way, way ahead of Indiana.
I think, but is it those two, and then is that the separation line of Nebraska?
There's someone who's going to come up and challenge. It could be Nebraska. It could be Wisconsin. It could be Iowa.
Yeah, see, I do like Wisconsin too, because Davidson and Happ, he's been there for like 1,000 years now.
Ken Pom has Happ right now as the number one player in the country. And I
don't think I've ever seen a player anything like him.
Yeah, I don't think
he's a point center.
Yeah, he's a great passer. He's a phenomenal passer, and it makes it very hard to double team him. And what they've got is a couple, unlike in the Northwestern game, I think Brian pointed this out, when Pardon was hurting us. And Pardon isn't a bad player, by the way. He's
a solid player.
He's much improved this year.
Yeah, he's a solid player.
But in the second half, we started double-teaming him, and he'd try to kick the ball, but he would kick it to a guy who couldn't shoot, because that's mostly what Northwestern has. But with Wisconsin, they're kicking it out to Demetric Price, who I think is shooting some ridiculous number from three.
Trice, excuse me.
He's like 56% from three or something like that.
Yeah.
And Brad Davidson, who's a good three-point shooter. So they got a couple guys that you can kick to, and so you can't really – it's hard to double team.
Also, their four is a shooter. They don't.
Yeah.
You know, Wisconsin's solid. Nebraska has a chance to be solid, along with Michigan. Michigan State probably at the top. Iowa, you mentioned they've got some talent. I don't know if they play enough defense for it to really matter.
Iowa's sort of reverting to their historical of the last year or two, Norm. I mean, they're an excellent offensive team. They've got a lot of guys who can play offense.
But they're terrible in defense.
They're not as bad as last year, but they're bad.
But they were 240th last year.
Yeah, last year was awful.
And they're like 90 right now.
Like, you know, the awful, awful beeline defenses that we were like, we need to do something about this, were like 100th.
Right. So they were better than that one.
For a major college basketball team, it was 240th is unprecedented.
It's only a handful of teams behind them.
there's like 350 teams now. Yeah. They only have to be like kind of bad, and they're going
to
make the tournament.
It's kind of like the question we're saying. They just have to. Their defense has to be good enough on every given night. Whatever that means, every given night it changes. Mm-hmm. But they have to be just good enough. Kind of like Oklahoma's hoping their defense could be against Alabama in the playoff game, just good enough.
But right. You know, I mean, Tyler Cook,
good player.
Luca Garza. Yeah,
they have players.
They have this Wisecamp kid who's a
Wisecamp. I mentioned when we were doing a podcast over wherever it was at the Bo store. I said, look, you got to look out for Joe Wisecamp, and Brian like. Rolling his eyes at me.
No, I mean,
I said no. This guy can, he's the leading scorer in Iowa high school basketball history, and that I watched some tape on him before and he is good. He's going to be an All Big Ten player for a couple of years there, and so you put Wieskamp in
all I got to do is defend a little bit,
just a little bit. Yeah. Then they'll be a tournament team. Yeah, then they'll be a tournament team.
Yeah,
yeah.
So they're a nice team, which it gets me back to a question that I've. About Michigan that I thought was sort of interesting. Beeline complained a bit about Michigan's defense after Western, and his press conference he was complaining that he didn't feel like defensively.
Well, that was the game where I stopped counting how many times after a defensive possession Yach got up and was pointing and screaming and whatever, so that kind of goes into what you're saying.
Yeah, and I thought, wow. How have things changed?
Well.
when during the earlier parts of his time here, you know, the idea was, well, let's the old, I think it was the old quote from Bob Knight about John Orr. He said, John Orr's idea of defense is to beat you 102-98. And I'm not saying that's what it was here, but it was like, let's just outscore teams if we can. And that really, really, really has changed
a lot.
And there was an interesting thing that came out during the broadcast of the Air Force game. It might be the guy from Northwestern who does color, who said he wondered if Michigan, because they've become such a great defensive team, was losing their focus on offense. And I thought, what a weird thing. I mean, does that,
We're going to talk about that, and we'll get to Mark on the other side of the break, because we've got to get our last break in here. But there actually could be something to that. I won't totally buy it, but there could be reasoning behind it. We'll get to that. Craig, before we get to the break, you're posing the question, the scenario about if your defense is at this elite level, will your offense essentially suffer because of it?
And that's something that was being speculated on, I think,
on TV.
On television.
I mean, the 20-hour rule has to come into play here, because if you were, say in the past, and I'm just throwing out random numbers, but say in the early part of the Beeline era, they were spending 75% of their practice time on offense to run all his sets and get everything, whatever, and then there's 25% on defense. And now maybe it's 75% on defense, and it's not always 50-50. It's never been 50-50. So what is that breakdown? How much time are you spending on one versus the other? is a part of it. And then, Brian, you obviously, personnel is a part of it, too, with how your offense is running.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that plays a non-shooter a lot of the time in Xavier Simpson. And then they give 25% usage to Charles Matthews. And Matthews is not a super efficient offensive player. Like, you know, often he drives, right? But what happens when he drives? Well, he has that little short pull-up jumper. And that's a good shot for him, and it's a good shot when the clock's running down, but it's not a layup. And that's those are the kind of things that he usually gets. Like, he's not a great shooter. He's not a great free throw shooter. And he doesn't get to the rim a ton. He's still coping in that situation, but it's not like, you know, you have a Nick Stauskas out there who's the focal point of your offense. So it's, you know, I think that if we were going to see some sort of pattern in that regression, it would be in turnovers. Like, if Michigan's turnover rate suddenly stopped being a top 10 turnover rate, then I might be a little bit concerned. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, they're, but you said they're ninth.
Yeah, so. I mean, I tracked the last 3 years because I assume in 2016 was when we sort of evolved into a team that was going to play some defense.
About halfway through the year.
Yeah, and there isn't any real change. I mean, we were eighth in 2016, fourth last year, ninth this year, and the numbers aren't much different. In fact, all the shooting numbers are pretty much identical over the last 3 years. And actually, all coaching is really is getting your guys in position to shoot. Coach can't make the ball go in the hole. All he can do is try and make sure you take good shots and shots that are consistent with the individual's ability. And the only place I see is free throw shooting, where we were a good free throw shooting team in 2016, and the last 2 years we've been dreadful. And that's strictly personnel. That's strictly having Xavier and Charles on, you know, shooting a lot of free throws as opposed to the past.
Yeah, or the game where Iggy went like started 0-for-3 or whatever from the line before he started getting better. But yeah,
yeah, one of those games in the last stretch, I think we started 3-of-11 and missed the front end of a one.
But they made the last, that was the Western game. They made 10 of the last 12 or 12 of the last 14, whatever it was, to what they needed him down the stretch.
Yeah, that
is going to be.
I think really when I went back and looked at that game, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It was just sort of a one-off weird anomaly where we weren't going to put the ball in the basket for whatever reason.
734-998-1050. You can email studio at WTK.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. Let's go to Lansing. Talk to Mark. Hello, Mark.
Merry Christmas or happy holidays.
Howdy, Mark.
You too, Mark.
I don't know if it's. I think it was Brian who mentioned. Who mentioned Z is maybe one of the contributions to the laws that we have on offense. And I got to put Teske in there, too. We got three. Often I look at us and we're playing 3-on-5 or 3.5 or 4-on-5. And there are going to be some limitations, especially when you recognize that we've got three of our four best shooters who are gone from last year. And it was very much a perimeter team. And those guys opened it up for Charles. And Charles, I don't think is a guy that really you can count on to be a 3-point shooter from, or at least somebody from deep. And Craig, you're right, man. This Beilein talk. I think Beilein mentioned the defense word last year more in 1 year than he did collectively in his prior 11 or 12 years.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a renewed emphasis there. Real quick, guys. Who are these legitimate Big Ten teams that are bona fide challengers for the not only the tournament but also for winning the conference? I like Ohio State, and I think I like Wisconsin, but the other ones I really don't know. So I'll be curious as to what your thoughts are.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate the call. 734-998-1050.
Yeah. Michigan State is. I hate to say it. That's a great offensive team. They shoot the ball. They're a phenomenal shooting team. They've had two losses, but it's close game to Kansas, and they lost at Louisville in overtime. They're really, really good. They're better without Miles Bridges and Jackson. They're a better team than they were last year.
Wait.
I've been saying that from the beginning of the season.
They're not as talented.
They're not as talented, but they're a better team.
Can't blame Jaren Jackson for sitting on the bench.
No, I'm not blaming those guys. I'm just saying they're a better team without them. So they're going to be tough. I still think this conference may come down to Michigan, Michigan State. I like Wisconsin, and I agree with Mark. We didn't mention Ohio State is good. That guy's a good coach there.
He's a really good coach.
And,
he's a good coach.
They're not talented enough, but
they have some holes. They have
holes.
A couple of guys that are on the court most of the time that aren't really creators. The other team I'd throw in there is Nebraska. I love Isaiah Roby as a guy who can switch, play all five positions. James Palmer. has really kind of upped his efficiency. And their point guard, Glenn Watson, was a terrible, awful, abominable shooter last year. This year, he's okay. And that, I think, is going to put them easily into the tournament. Yeah. And, you know, if I think it's going to be Michigan, Michigan State. But, like, if there's a couple of contenders coming from below, I got Wisconsin and Nebraska.
Yeah, that's the second tier. That second tier, and then I mean, there's maybe a third
Indiana and Iowa you can throw in there in the second tier,
and then
as well.
The third tier, the there's a couple of dreadful programs like Rutgers, and there's that
there's Rutgers in Illinois.
Yeah, they're dreadful.
Everybody else has a shot at the tournament.
But you know, I'll tell you what,
probably true.
Those teams aren't quite as bad as a casual fan might think. I mean, Rutgers is terrible on offense. They only have two guys who can even hit the backboard routinely. But that's a good defensive team that plays really hard on defense.
And they won at Miami.
Yeah.
The Big Ten will not be the worst at the bottom of the major conferences.
No.
But they have been in the past. They will not be this year.
No, that's not true. Even close. There's no team in this conference that's bad. There's some teams that aren't.
There's no team that's awful.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I would say. There's no dreadful teams. Yeah. There's a couple of bad teams.
And but once you get beyond Illinois and Rutgers, the teams start getting good, and then
it comes down to coaching and talent. And some of those teams have talent. Some of those teams have coaching, and some of those teams have both. And it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and most everybody's got a couple of sort of awkward gaps.
Like Indiana Center is usually 6'7". You know the. Minnesota has like no point guard. Isaiah Washington, they're playing.
Yeah,
like Northwestern doesn't have a point guard. There's like not a ton of complete teams, but there's a lot of good teams.
Should be a really good Big Ten season. Yeah. Next week, when you guys come back, we'll be talking about the bowl game. We'll recap that to put the season officially to bed, and we will of course be into Big Ten play at that point in time, getting ready for the Penn State game is next Thursday, and then the Indiana game next Sunday. So.